Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 118, CJ Evolution. Patrick here, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for tuning in. You know, we talk so much about getting to that next level in your performance, getting to that next level in your life. My good friend, Kim Ades, can help you get there. Kim is the president and founder of Frame of Mind Coaching and Journal Engine Software. Author, speaker, entrepreneur, coach, and mother of five, Kim is recognized as one of North America's foremost experts on performance through mastery. Using her unique philosophy and quirky coaching style, Kim helps her clients shift their thinking in order to yield extraordinary results and personal transformation. Head over to www.frameofmindcoaching.com and check out what Kim can do for you. On to the great interview with my friend, Morgan Wright. All right, everybody, welcome back. From a city cop to a national leader, Morgan Wright is a recognized expert on international cybersecurity and U.S. law enforcement. In addition to testifying before Congress on matters of cybersecurity, he has appeared over 400 times in national TV, radio, and print media as an expert on computer crime, cyber terrorism, computer intrusions, and crime investigations. Welcome, sir. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here today.
Hey, Patrick. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your former law enforcement experience?
Sure. In the great words of J.D. Buck Savage, saw drunk, arrested same. By the way, Dave Smith, the guy who does that, is a good friend of mine. No, hey, look, I started off really as a city cop. I was a Salina police officer, Salina, Kansas. And this is back in the early 80s, 1982. About 2.5 years later, I put in for the state patrol, and I was one of 16 people hired. About 2,000 applied. Why they picked me, I don't know, but me and 15 others of my brothers and sisters in arms. Actually, that was what was interesting on that, Patrick, just a quick aside, is that was in 1984, was only the third female that the patrol had ever hired in its entire history since 1937. We're going back away. So I did that. I was on the state patrol, and then I wanted to get into investigations. Well, since Kansas was a state patrol, I looked at the KBI, the Kansas Bureau of Investigation, but they wanted to move me clear across the state. I was divorced and remarried. So unfortunately, you know, one of the side effects of being in law enforcement, sometimes you get divorced. But I didn't want to move 450 miles across the state, so I stayed where I was, went on to the police department, worked into investigations. And then I did that for a total of about 18 years. But then it's just one of those things. Look, I wasn't quite cut out to be a bootlicker and a butt kisser. And I'm being very careful picking my words here.
Oh, I know.
So it became very obvious I needed to move on and do some other stuff. And but I started doing a lot of work teaching computer crime investigation. I went to my first computer crime course in 93. So I did a lot of that. So I ended up for a year and a half, I ran Microsoft's global anti-piracy program over the internet. And then, but at the same time, I was also teaching behavior analysis and interview and interrogation. We were just talking right before for John Reed Associates. I was their first outside instructor. So I ended up teaching out at the National Security Agency. We had the damage assessment agents from the Aldrich James, Earl Edwin Pitts, and Harold James Nicholson espionage cases in there. Always loved the intersection of behavior and technology. Then after that, got an offer from a very large defense contractor, moved out to Virginia. I've always stayed with public safety, public sector, intelligence, justice, something, you know, related to protecting and defending America since 1982. But then, spent about 14 years in the corporate side. And after I had to lay off 340 people, I said, that's it, no more.
Yeah.
So now I've been doing my own thing for the last 5 years, but have a couple other interesting things in the mix.
Wow.
So that's the short story.
What an amazing career, and you're still at it. What do you think about the proliferation of technology, where we're at now, Morgan, with so much? And there's just so much out there, a lot more, obviously, than when I was growing up, probably obviously when were growing up. I mean, it's just amazing. We have so much power in our hands right now.
Well, it's kind of an oxymoron. We do and we don't. So when I started off in 82, the only people who could afford computers were public safety, public sector, government. So I remember being on a green screen, typing out the teletypes. Because in Salina, I would fill in. Our dispatchers were actually sworn police officers, so I would fill in when they would go on break, and then I ended up doing when they were on days off, then when they went on vacation. So I got very familiar with that. But it was interesting because over time what happened was is that the private sector, citizens, had no access really to technology, no cell phones, no mobile phones. But that's flipped to where now if you look at the average millennial, let's say, by the way, the average or the median age of a police officer in the United States today is 26.6 years old, right smack in the middle of the millennials. So they've grown up with access to social media and smartphones and technology. So I think we're getting back to that. But yeah, I think it's something, even with all of the stuff that they're doing, we still haven't really figured out how to deliberately apply technology to solve the needed mission problems we do. And we get too bogged down. When I say we, I'm still referring kind of collectively, is government is still trying to be modern and cutting edge, but they're still applying antiquated procurement processes, how they go out and get the technology, how they actually use it. I mean, I used to joke, I did a very large project down at the Department of Justice. It was on information sharing. It's now called One DOJ, but it was called the Law Enforcement Information Sharing Program. One of our big jokes was yesterday's technology tomorrow. And that was how the government approached it. So I think there's some good stuff, but I think there's some cautionary tales, especially when we start talking about artificial intelligence, machine learning, some facial recognition, biometrics, things like that. I think there's some very cautionary tales around privacy that have killed off big projects like Total Information Awareness, Admiral Poindexter down at DARPA. So I mean, I think it's a great thing. I have a personal belief is I think there's some other things we ought to be doing. I'm not a big fan of using the AI and the facial recognition stuff like people want to do on body-worn cameras. I think some of that's not going to be as easy to do as people are trying to position it. But again, overall, I think we've come a long way in a short amount of time, and I'm very excited to see the advent of FirstNet, the National Public Safety Broadband. When I was at Alcatel-Lucent as a vice president, it was my team. We actually deployed and built the very first public safety broadband using the spectrum allocated for public safety. So I was there at the very beginning. So I'm very interested to see where the high-speed stuff goes, where the applications go, the mobile environment. So I think we're fast moving much faster in the last 3 years than we did in the past 10 years.
Now, what do you think, since you open up the door with biometrics and facial recognition, I mean, and even AI, I mean, is there a place for all that? And there has to be in modern law enforcement, right, Morgan?
Well, here's the challenge. So, for example, and I am I tell you right now, just be upfront. I know Axon's doing this free body worn camera program. Number one, I think it's disingenuous. I think it's replete with a lot of problems people haven't thought through. Number one is policy. And, you know, and procurement, but and actually training and deployment, you got to have your policies first. But with AI, you know, how are they training this? And I have a concern that they're training this, their artificial intelligence, on the actual videos that belong to the law enforcement agencies, or they're having access to some of this other stuff with this national free trial. So I think there are huge privacy concerns. And look, I was there. You know, I was there in the day when we talked. Look, I've pushed the limit on privacy. What can we do? Get search warrants. But here's my fear is that you're entering an age to when you have a few, when so much power is consolidated in the hands of very few companies to where they can control how things are done. This almost starts becoming a reverse of Big Brother, to where it's the government isn't Big Brother. It's the industries are the only one with this kind of technology. So I think there is a role for it. I think there is a role for machine learning. But I think where it's most applicable is in the area of cybersecurity. And I think when you start looking at the vulnerabilities of state and local governments, when we start looking at all of these databases that have intelligence information in there, that have criminal histories in there, I think there's a better place to apply artificial intelligence and machine learning. I think it's almost a false narrative to say that I'm going to have a body-worn camera that is going to be able to transmit live video back to some area, some central collection point, to where your video comes in, I'm transmitting it back, because there's no way you can hold all of the facial recognition data, you know, on a camera, at least not at this point, and without draining your battery. As you know, too, Patrick, you think about batteries. Where have cops always griped about batteries? Usually they're handheld radios, you know.
Exactly.
They die, right? So think about the drain on those things. So, well, I think it's good. I think that's more going to be for fixed stuff, and we already have a lot of issues. I think there's a role for it. I think it's more going to be in the cyber side. But I do like the fact is that when we start looking at predicting organized retail crime, for example, the use of artificial intelligence, machine learning, to start saying, hey, if you're in a store and these are characteristics inherent in what an organized retail crime gang does, you know, and I'd see some stuff like that, but that's fixed static type of surveillance that would then notify law enforcement, hey, we've got something here. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a very much a cautionary tale. Even Elon Musk came out. He talked to the National Governors Association we're talking on July, 16th. And I know it'll come out here in a few days, but he just got through talking to the National Governors Association. He actually warned against the use of artificial intelligence, about how dangerous it could become, and that you need to put some regulations in place. So I think that there's a lot – we've got a lot more thinking to do before we can really start deploying it in a big way mm-hmm. inside law enforcement. I tell you where it would be used, though. I'd love to see it used more in the intelligence field. We definitely lack a lot of the human asset side for human intelligence. So we've got to beef that up with some artificial intelligence about predictive capability of terrorist attacks, the use of IEDs, trends, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting when we talk about AI because, I mean, there's like almost like split fence because I've read articles where people think or people are saying, well, it's definitely going to be the future. And then other people are saying, well, it's not going to be as big as people think.
I wish I wish I could be 100% sure about those predictions because I would have retired years ago. You know, anybody who says, "Well, this is the way it's going to be," you know, they're lying to you. I mean, yeah. You talked earlier in the intro about, yeah, I've been on the news enough. I actually turn it down now more than I go on simply because I don't want to get into some of the politics and get into this name calling stuff. I would rather talk about the ones and zeros and what the technology's doing as opposed sure. to political parties, but. You know, I think a lot of this gets into it's the people who say they can predict. They say, "Well, this is what's going to happen." I'd like to go back and look at your prior history over the last 5 years of the things that you predicted and how much of that stuff is actually accurate. So they're never held accountable for their prior predictions. They just want to be known for their current ones. And the more controversial and that you are, adversarial, the more airtime you're going to get.
True. Good point. What do you think, Morgan? What do you think some of the biggest threats to security are today? I mean, I know it's probably a huge question, but what do you think some of that, we were always hearing on the news about, you know, cyber threats and everything. I know that's big, but what do you think some of the biggest security issues are today?
Stupidity.
Yeah. Well, frankly, I mean, that's a good point. Know, yeah, people aren't taking care of their information or anything like that, right?
How many data breaches do we have to have and bad passwords do we have to have before people start realizing, guys, start doing just some basic stuff, which is encrypt everything in motion or at rest. Use a virtual private network, which is for your massive audience out there. I mean, in the millions of people that are listening to this podcast today, folks, use a VPN. Secure your transmission of data from end to end. That means, for example, right now we're using Skype right now. Skype is encrypted end to end. So if anybody's trying to listen in on this conversation, let's assume we were having a very sensitive law enforcement conversation, you wouldn't be able to do it because it's encrypted end to end. It's basically its own VPN. I mean, use two-factor authentication. If you've got any kind of a Google account, Gmail, if you've got Apple, most of these things, almost all of them support either two-factor authentication or two-step verification. You add another layer of security to your logins to prevent people from doing it. And quit clicking on the stupid links in these emails that are infecting you with ransomware. My God, you only have to get hit in the head with the hammer once or twice before you see the third hammer coming at you going, oh, this one's going to hurt, and stay the heck out of the way.
Yeah, and I feel bad for you know, certain groups out there, Morgan, like you know, the elderly, you know, especially law enforcement. They didn't grow up with this. I'm not saying everybody out there, a lot of older people, but some of them they just didn't grow up with this technology, and I see a lot of it in law enforcement where they really become they're becoming more and more the victim out there because they just don't know.
So, bingo, there you go. You know what I would use AI for? I would use AI in terms of you start getting people and parents, kids, children could do this with their parents the same way they do it with the alert notifications and stuff you see from John Walsh on there, you know, and these I fall in and I can't get up folks. I mean, I can see artificial mm-hmm. intelligence being used more to prevent phishing and spear phishing and spam and things like that. If you do the basics, I mean, it almost goes back to football. I go back to one of Vince Lombardi's great stories was after the Green Bay Packers won the first Super Bowl, they come in the next season. What did he do? He started off by holding up the football and saying, gentlemen, this is the football. Back to basics. Look at Nick Saban. Look at the great coaches out there. There's a great biography about Bill Walsh and the 49ers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just the basics. It's the fundamentals. And the people who are drilled and trained in those end up doing better, whether it's war fighters, you know, cops as well, you know, too. I mean, think about this. If you've got a good, solid cop, most of the time what they do is they're trained in the fundamentals. They write good reports. They've got good PC for an arrest. For you non-law enforcement types out there, that's probable cause. I mean, you can have reasonable suspicion to stop somebody, probable cause to arrest. You know, they're just a good, solid officer. And when they're usually a good, solid officer, what do they do well? The fundamentals. Mm-hmm. You know, officer safety, weapon retention, things like that.
Amazing. Let's switch back around. You mentioned body cameras earlier on,
yes,
sir. What do you think the future of body cameras are? Where do you think it's going?
I think where it's going, and I'm speaking about this to the National Association of Counties July 21st out in Columbus, Ohio. I'm doing an expert session for them. I'm doing two things, talking about blockchain and body-worn cameras. And I think what we have is we have what I call the transparency paradox. Tori, you think about drawing like a little graph, put an L on a piece of paper, you know, a big L on there. You know, it's about 6 inches high and 6 inches long, but it's an L. And at the very top, say it's like about 2014, you've got a dot up there, and that's where we were a few years ago. So at the top, what you've got is our ability to process the video and our ability to be transparent. At the bottom, basically what you have is the amount of video being collected and the desire for this transparency. Everybody, when you read any article, Patrick, what are the police chiefs and other people saying? Well, we're doing this because we want more transparency.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, what happens over time is that one that started that was at the very top of the graph, which is your ability to process and your ability to be transparent, it starts going down and to the right. Why? It's because the desire for this now is going up, and so our ability to be transparent is actually decreasing as the desire for it goes up. Why? Because we're collecting more and more video. And what happens, too, is a lot of these models that use public cloud, whether it's Amazon or Microsoft for the back end, which is what Axon does, which is what VView does, what you end up getting is that paradoxically is the more cameras you put out there, the less transparent you are. Why? Because there's more video being collected, more things that you have to analyze. So you end up with this transparency paradox. And the biggest thing that people are ending up with, and this is where I find one of the I'm fundamentally ticked off about this as a taxpayer, as well as I've been on the inside. I've seen how this stuff happens, is when you sell a government agency $100,000 worth of cameras, let's say, in storage, and you say, oh, that's fine, you've got unlimited storage. People forget, you may have unlimited storage. What you don't have is unlimited capability to conduct transactions with that storage. So what I mean by that is it's transactional. Every time you pull the lever on that and you want to download a video, you're being charged by the gigabyte for that, by Amazon, by Microsoft. They don't do anything for free. They're not a storage. I mean, they're not just about storage. They charge you for the transactions. They charge you for accessing their resources. So you might think that, hey, doesn't cost us to store anything. We're paying $100,000 over 5 years, so $20,000 a year. Your storage costs might be zero. Your transactional costs might be $20,000 to $50,000 a year. That's what the city of Philadelphia found out. That's what a lot of these other agencies have found out, is that the cost of this. So I think there has to be a new business model that gets away from public cloud and goes more back into what I call a private cloud. It's either on-premise or a private cloud, to where you actually own the disk space that you're storing this information on, and all you do is pay for what they call the three P's, the power, ping, and pipe. So you have a fixed cost, a predictable cost every month that says we pay so much to store so much, and it's a fixed cost regardless of how many times we use this. And I'll give you the best example. Think about the people who bought their house. They pay a one-time fee for that, right? Mm-hmm. If you do the public cloud model, what would happen is you'd pay a smaller fee, but you'd be charged every time you use the key on your front door and open up your door.
Wow.
So it would be all those transactional costs. Imagine what happens over time after you add that up. How many times do you go? You don't think about it going in and out of your house, right? But mm-hmm. What if that was the model? People would think long and hard, well, do I really need to leave my house today? Or, oh my gosh, maybe I shouldn't go in my front door because I'm going to get charged for that again. That's what's happening. So that's where I see the problem. And the other thing I see is some legal issues brewing, because not every state has the same policies on the release of video. I just went to a conference and I actually said, guys, let's think about this. when you have a real positive video, you have no problem releasing that. But yet when you have a video that might be controversial or that might paint an officer in a bad light, you know, or might show some conduct, misconduct, you're very hesitant to release that. You don't do it. I said, you can't have it both ways.
Exactly.
Either you release it all or you don't release anything. And when you don't release anything, like what Pennsylvania just passed a law about, giving police agencies very wide latitude on whether to release stuff or not, then I think what you do is you invite legal challenges to where mm-hmm. they say, okay, fine, we're going to sue you. And then now where do we spend our money on that? Should be going to cops and overtime and buying new vehicles. We spend it on legal challenges, defending ourselves against a bad policy.
Wow. And, you know, in body cameras, they're not the end-all be-all. I mean, they're just a tool. They're not going to, you know, people, I think some people yep. out there think, well, because an officer is wearing a body camera, it's going to show everything. Well, I mean, not necessarily the case. It maybe shows one vantage point or two, but it doesn't solve all the problems. That's just another tool, right?
Well, think about this. Think about that. I'm the officer and you're the bad guy. And I come up to you and I said, hey, Patrick, you know, hey, I need to pat you down. I think you might have weapons. And you basically go F you. And I start to put my hands on you and I forget my body camera's rolling or isn't rolling yet. So I reach up to turn on the body camera and then you see that and you go, oh, you recording me? Now the fight's on. So now we're engaged in this hand-to-hand combat. It's just you and me. My backup's still, say, 2 to 3 minutes away. Exactly what are you going to see on that body camera?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I mean, and so the point is, and that's to your point, it is a perspective. It is not the perspective. And the only way to get that is to get, you know, the God view, which is to have a drone overhead that sees everything and records everything. And so, I mean, there's another source of video, which adds to the transparency paradox. So, and I'll tell you, it goes back to when we had the in-car videos and people started coming out and say, hey, that's great. But what it would not show, and there's a great set of videos that came out of Texas. They stopped this guy. They ended up shooting him as a lethal force situation. And if you looked at one of the videos, it would look like this guy wasn't armed at all. It would look like they shot an unarmed guy. Yet when you get the second in-car video and then the third in-car video and you put them together, you know what you clearly see? You clearly see a guy with a stainless steel, look like a 6-inch revolver, pointing it at one of the cops. And then he starts to walk off, and then you can see his arm start to come up in the third car video. That's why they shot him. I mean, it was totally justified that they did the investigation. But if you'd only had that first in-car camera video without the perspective of everything else, it would have looked like they shot an unarmed guy.
But it's interesting because there's so many videos out there, you know, Morgan, that there's so many, unfortunately, there's so many videos out there where, you know, cops are using lethal force, and they have to in most cases.
Yep.
But all you see is one video that gets posted right
out
away.
Of context. It's
out of context.
Completely
video.
Out of context.
And bam, then the firestorm hits. You know, and then
well,
the media.
Well, okay.
Is
what's
all up
funny? I was in this body worn camera conference. I've been doing a lot of research on it, looking at it. And Seattle PD was there. And Seattle, if you know, is obviously they're a very liberal bastion. That's their politics. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get out of the car, you have to inform people they're being recorded. So here's the funny part is you go to Seattle PD's YouTube channel, they post all their body worn video. They have to because a guy basically used their public records request law against them and asked for every single body camera video from every single officer. And so they had this whole issue. They just actually got through the legal challenges and they're now starting to deploy their body worn cameras. But think about this. Now you're getting out of the vehicle to go chase a bad guy and you have to tell the guy that he's being recorded as you're trying to think about all this stuff. Is my camera on? Oh, by the way, you're being recorded. You're getting into a foot chase. Well, because guess what? We don't have one coherent policy. And I'll tell you where this is going. If you're in Colorado, if you go to California or you go to Virginia, I guarantee you in every state the stop sign is red. It's octagonal with the white word stop on there. Speed limit signs are white with black letters. Yield signs are yellow triangular with black or with have the red border around them. Right. It's the uniform manual on traffic control devices. We realized long ago we needed to have standards because people would cross state lines. We needed to have that's why yellow lines mean don't cross solid yellow lines. You know, separate directions of traffic, solid or and white lines can separate traffic going in the same direction. We have standards for this. We don't have any standards around body-worn camera, and I think there will be a bevy of legal challenges that are going to force at least some point, maybe some federal law about because you know what? It's that way with we're getting that way with DNAs and fingerprints and stuff like that. So I think body-worn will again. People are making it out. It's almost you're talking about AI.
Yeah.
I think people are making it out to be the silver bullet, the savior. It's going to save everything. I don't think so. I think it's going to be another piece of evidence you're going to have to manage, and unless you know how to do it transparently and how to manage it effectively, cost effectively, it's going to break the bank on some of these agencies.
Interesting. How does blockchain, sir, changing gears a little bit, how does blockchain apply to the public sector? And for those of you who don't know what blockchain is, it's a distributed database that is used to maintain a continuous growing list of records called blocks. Is that correct, Morgan?
Yeah. If you guys think about it, everybody's probably heard of Bitcoin by now.
Mm-hmm.
And Bitcoin is based on the underlying cryptography underneath that is called blockchain. So basically blockchain is it's cryptography is what it is. And it's the integrity of the chain is protected by cryptography. And the structure, what the structure is called in those blocks, it's called the Merkle tree, which basically means is you take a hash function, which means I apply a cryptographic algorithm to get this unique 32-bit number that if I just changed one dot, one bit, one byte, it changes the number. So I know beyond a doubt, beyond even the level of doubt in a court case, I know that this is the same thing that was put into the system. Well, after 10 minutes, we tie all these things together with what's called the Merkle tree, and then we publish that to the public blockchain. What that means is that's irrefutable accountability. It's kind of like the rings of a tree, is that you can't – if I wanted to go in and change – a ring of a group of trees. Do you mind? You know how hard that would be to go in and take that ring out of all of those trees? Well, that's what the blockchain is. The blockchain are these things that are chained together. The higher what they call the higher a block, it's mathematically basically impossible to do it. I don't want to say it can't be done. Never say never, James Bond. But so what happens is here's what we need to move from. And this is, to me, this is the exciting part. So if you just accept that blockchain, the underlying piece of cryptography for Bitcoin allows you to move value from one location to another without a third-party intermediary, which is the banks, or without having to audit your books, which is what PricewaterhouseCoopers and Ernst & Young do. So imagine now, let me give you a very specific case since this is the CJ podcast here. What is the one of the things you do? You collect a piece of evidence. What you have to do with that, Patrick? You have to fill out a form. Mm-hmm. You have to take it to the station. You have to log it into evidence. Then what
happens?
Chain of custody. What's that?
Chain of custody. I'm sorry.
Chain of custody. Absolutely. Then an evidence technician has to take it, log it in there. Then you go take it to court. Well, then you have to go in and check it out, bring this in. And then if you go to a trial, let's say they bring everybody in because you have to provide explicit trust that this item is the piece that you picked up. And so explicit trust is manually created trust. What would happen if we had implicit trust, which is mean automated trust, to where I could now have this fingerprint, let's say, show up in court. I don't have to have anybody else show up because the use of blockchain, I can show that it's the same fingerprint that was taken from the scene. It's the same one that was logged into evidence. It's the same one that's sitting before the court today. And we don't have to testify about chain of custody at all. It's implicitly shown that I can trust this device. Why? It's because the trust is automated. It gets beyond a third party. And so this is part of the discussion with the National Association of Counties. I actually go through a whole system showing from the police get a case. They have evidence. They have reports. And in the old way, you've got you're killing trees left and right because you have to make copies for the DA or the county attorney or district attorney, whatever flavor you guys have out there. Then they have to make copies for who? The defense under discovery. Mm-hmm. Then everybody has to provide copies to the court. Then if the court has records, they have to provide copies back to people. Then let's say that the guy gets convicted and now it's a felony, so he's going to go to prison. Then the Department of Correction creates own records. Oh, unless he's given probation from that and he doesn't do time, so then you have to go to community corrections. But then if he's in prison, then when he gets done doing his time, guess what he has most of the time? They have parole. Mm-hmm. So think about all the trees that have died and all the documents that are floating around out there. And it's almost, I'll tell you where it's really going to disrupt things. It's actually in the mortgage industry, and that's what I looked at. Think about all the documents that have to prove that you were eligible to get this house at the time you bought it, and then they have to go back and revisit it. So this blockchain, I think, in criminal justice will disrupt all of this, including I could prove to you that I knew that you had exactly 1 minute and 32.8 seconds of video on that body worn camera that are relevant to this case, that mm-hmm. this piece that you gave me out of it actually comes from that 1 minute and 32.8 seconds of video, and that if I introduce it in court, I can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that I know how much video existed. I know that this piece of video came out of it. Think about the efficiencies we could create and the trust we could create, and most importantly, the transparency we could create. So I think there's some big things for blockchain that are going to change auditing. I think about if you're a state and local government, one of the things you have to have is transparency on your finances. Where does money come from? It's taxpayer money. Where does it go? How is it spent? Mm-hmm. blockchain gives us the ability to be totally transparent about all that. That's what's scaring the bejesus out of banks and auditors, because it's going to cut them out of the transaction loop.
And thus money.
money makes the world go round, absolutely.
We're wrapping up, sir. Where do you see the future of law enforcement? I mean, how's it evolving? I know that law enforcement's been under the microscope in the last several years, but where do you think it's going, sir? I mean, I know that's a pretty broad question, but I mean, what's your take on it?
That's a good question. I mean, I tell you, I think in the United States, we're going to have to deal. Look, one of my roles, I used to be a senior advisor for the U.S. State Department Anti-Terrorism Assistance Program. I was over in Pakistan. I was over in Turkey. I was over in the Middle East. I've worked on Plan Colombia for the government down in Bogota, Colombia, with the narco traffickers. One intelligence and information and systems, to help win the war on drugs. Now we're talking about the war on terrorism. I tell you, I think public safety is going to have to change the way that they view things, how they handle things. We have threats that we've never faced before. We have vehicle-borne IEDs. We have suicide bombers that are going. I mean, you take a look at what's happening in London. Mm-hmm. With the latest attacks there, with the vehicle attacks. It's just a little over a year ago that the terrorist piece of scum got a truck down in Nice, France, and killed 80 people. You know, we have been so fortunate that we haven't had to deal with some of the stuff that I'm afraid that we are unprepared for some of this ideologically. Mm-hmm. We don't understand the enemy. If you can't define the enemy, you can't defeat him. So I'm afraid political correctness is tamping down the actual lessons people need to learn about how to address this threat. A great friend of mine, a former FBI agent that wrote the manual basically on counterterrorism and the Muslim Brotherhood, teaches a course called Understanding the Threat. If you guys get a chance to go out there, I think it's called understandingthethreat.com. I think this is one of our big holes that we exploit. That's on that one side. On the other side, I think from a cyber standpoint, our critical infrastructure and the role law enforcement is going to play in defending attacks against that, it may be outside the province of any one agency, and we're going to start looking at more collaborative efforts between federal, tribal, state, and local law enforcement to defend our critical infrastructure. I just did a documentary with a group of people called True Iran, where I talked about the threat of Iran from a cyber standpoint. And look, my one-liner from that was, I said, look, any nation smart enough to build nuclear weapons is smart enough to conduct offensive cyber operations. They've already been into a dam in the United States. We have nuclear plants. We've got the power grid. You think about the chaos that would happen in your area if all the power went out, as it did in Ukraine, December 23rd, 2015, to 700,000 homes. Jeez. So, I think, from a professional standpoint, I think we're going to see a sea change in policies and how things are done, because by 2020, 50% of the workforce will be millennials. That's why I kicked off talking about the median age of a police officer in the U.S. today is 26.6 years old. So 50% of the workforce will be millennials by 2020, and there will be four generations in the workforce. You'll have millennials, you'll have Gen Y, Gen X, and baby boomers. All in the workforce at 2020. It's going to be very unique from a management standpoint, from a training standpoint, a recruiting standpoint. Why you and I got into this business and why I got into this in 1982, I would have worked for free. Mm-hmm. I worked midnights. I had no weekends off for a long time. As a state trooper, I'd work 10, 11, 12-hour shifts, go home, get up and do the same thing all over again without taking overtime. So I think I think we have three aspects, the physical, the threat from a threat standpoint, the actors, how we're going to recruit and manage people, and from a technology standpoint, how are we going to keep our system safe and up and operational to where as we go more digital and more mobile, it doesn't make it easier to disrupt us. We need to harden our defenses in many of these areas. So I can't predict where it's going to go, but if I were going to look at things, I would say I would focus on people, technology, and behaviors, and see what we can do to shore up our defenses.
Well, it seemed like law enforcement, the job used to be a lot simpler, Morgan.
Dude, when I got out of the State Patrol Academy, I had a Smith & Wesson 686, a pair of ammo dumps, not speed loaders, ammo dumps. We had to load our Smith & Wesson one round at a time, a set of handcuffs. I had a vest that was so tough to move around in, it was like wearing armor plating, literally, and a KR-10 SP. and a Motorola radio that worked half the time. And when it didn't work, I took it into the radio shop. They banged it with a hammer to get it to work. So that's the way it was back then.
And now you got millennials that come to work and they can't work if their laptop and their MDT in their car doesn't work. I can't.
But if Facebook, goes down, go, oh my God, or Snapchat or something like that. Yeah, it's like, yeah, I mean, there was none of this back in the day, you know. Yeah. So I think it's, but you know what? I remember too some of the old timers griping about the fact is us recruits, we got to wear short sleeves. Back in the day, they wore long sleeves, you know, and wool uniforms.
They hiked seven miles to work.
Yeah, uphill both ways. Yeah.
Well, Morgan Wright, if people want to reach out to you, sir, where can they find you?
I'm going off the net officially. I'm going to be like Ted Kaczynski and go hiding out in the woods somewhere. No. Best way to find me is at morganwright.us. That's my personal, or that's my professional site. I'm on Twitter at morganwright_US and on Facebook. Look, I'm easy to find. Just go Google me. If you can't find me, you probably should not be on the internet.
Well, Morgan, sir, thank you for taking the time to visit us today. It was very enlightening and educational, sir. Thank you so much.
Hey, and I appreciate you putting these podcasts on. I think the last note here, I think one of the biggest challenges is to have that transparency, the issue of community policing, to create those partnerships between the police and the public, you know, to make these things work. So I think this is very helpful in doing that. So great job on this, Patrick.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Take care.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.